The 1998 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 377, Satan, Sex, and Seminary Teachers, the Forbidden Soundtrack of a Chosen Generation, with panelists John Farrell Lines, Matt Coates, Sean Holman, Matthew Workman, and Spaff Sumption.
Okay, can we have a look? Control, solid. Hello! Thank you. Okay. Thank you for coming today. This is session number 476. My name is Farrell Lines. And I'm going to introduce the panelists, and then what we'll do is go in order, and they will actually tell you a little about themselves for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll actually go into the music portion of this panel. So first off, let me just prepare you by saying, once again, if there are any pregnant women or children here, but I'd like to warn you. Okay, let's get on with the panel. This is M. Spaff Sumption. Next to him, Sean Boy Walton. Okay. No, he'll introduce himself to me as a celebrity here in Salt Lake. Matt Workman, a celebrity in Los Angeles. And we have Sean Holman and Matt Coates. So let me pass the microphone down.
Hi, my name's Spaff, and I'm a pop music addict. If you haven't been prepared for this yet, we've kind of based a lot of what we're about to say on this book, Lexi Azevedo's Pop Music and Morality. Maybe I should ask to start off with, though, is Brother D. Azevedo here? No? Good. Okay. This book had a profound effect on me in my youth. It came out when I was a ninth grader at Mill Creek Junior High, the Land Bountiful. And up till that point, I really had a lot of trust in what church leaders in general told me, and I believed everything that was both spoken and written. And then I read this. And at the time, I was a big Beatles fan, which I still am. And I went through this book, and Lexi Azevedo said so many ornery things about the Beatles, quoted the lyrics out of context and everything. I thought, you know, this is just wrong. This is wrong. And it shook my testimony. So, and that's why I'm here today. I'm currently in Austin, Texas, and I'm pursuing a MBA degree down there so that I can get a real job since I graduated with an English degree from BYU.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I never read this book, but I'm going to have to go buy it or steal it from you. Looks good. My name's Sean Zebarth. That is right in my... Or turn it. Yeah, just play with it. Nice shine off the top of my head here. My name is Sean Zebarth. I work at a radio station here in Salt Lake City. I was on student review and went to BYU. I grew up in Southern California, and I've been listening to music since I was a kid. Started with my mother and father's Bee Gees and Mamas and Papas music, and then I started listening to everything from, when I was a kid, Cheap Trick to Culture Club to punk rock, TSOL, all very, very bad stuff. And I remember one time, you know, my parents always yelling at me, the music's too loud, turn it down, you're going to hell, whatever. And I remember very specifically this one instance when my mother comes up, She comes up to my room, and I've got all these posters all over my wall, and she was going off at me for some music reason. And I said, "Mom, you want to see how much I care about music?" And I go to the wall, and I rip down my Boy George poster. Just rip it to shreds. "That's how much I care about music," and throw it at her. And I always kind of regretted doing it. It's kind of a cool poster, but needless to say. And anyways, and now I always laugh at my parents because it's like, "Mom, Dad, you always discourage me from listening to music. I mean, I don't remember you." And that's not true. My dad took me to my first concert, and he drove me there and waited outside. So they did support me in some ways. And then, so now that I make a living off of playing and listening to music, it's kind of a good stab at them. It's like, "Oh, I made a living off of it. Ha-ha, you told me not to." I was actually involved in one of the firesides. I don't even know if it was part of a big tour or what it was, but some guy in a white suit and white shirt and tie comes in and starts talking to us about music and how evil it is and plays the stuff backwards. "Devo with it is about masturbation." And I'm like, "I never thought of it that way." Okay. He played the Queen backwards. He played all the stuff backwards. So the first thing I do, I get home, I bring my friend over. I said, "Hey, check this out." And we're... I'm like 7th or 8th grade. So, and I never... So it really opened my eyes to how music can be evil. And I loved it even more. And then it's been funny... Now, doing what I do, I'm a DJ, I'm the music director at the station, and I used to DJ at clubs, smoky clubs, and, you know, play music. You know, today, we're worried about backwards masking. We have songs like Nine Inch Nails, "I Want to F You Like an Animal." They don't even worry with backwards masking anymore. It's just, they just put the message right out in the open. And I think there will always be artists like that. I mean, Marilyn Manson, you know, we used to think Alice Cooper was Satan. I mean, that guy's nothing compared to Marilyn Manson and some of these people now. So times have changed. And I just want to share one more thing with you. When I moved to this ward that I'm now in, it was right before we moved in, and I went to priesthood, and they said, we're talking about the word of wisdom or something, and they said how important it was to not go to bars. I mean, the reason why you shouldn't go to bars and clubs like that is because, you know, the temptation's there. You're supposed to be in holy places, and there's always this very dark, you know, foreboding atmosphere in these clubs and stuff. And I'm sitting there in the back row thinking, I provide the atmosphere at these clubs. But it's actually not bad. My bishop's, he's like 36. He's a young guy. He listens to the station. He asked me to make him tapes of music that he hears. So now I don't get as much, I don't get hassled for it very much at all. But when I was a kid, I did. Evil is music. Music is evil. Amen.
Hi, my name is Matt Workman. I live in California. I don't do very much with my life. I used to write for the Review, Student Review, and now I don't, because I don't live in Utah anymore. I sadly really don't have any negative church music experiences. I was brought up in upstate New York, and we were just too busy, because we were all geeks in school. If you're Mormon and you're in New York, you're not going to be popular. So we were just worried about getting some friends, let alone what they were putting in the back of music. Our church dances were mostly Chicago and stuff like that, so, you know, we had much bigger problems than whether or not Satan was lurking. It was like, you know, I can't even remember who the lead singer of Chicago is now. My mind has blotted that out. Peter said, I wanted to say David Sedaris, but he's this guy on a radio show. Peter Cetera. Yeah, we didn't care if Peter Cetera had sold his soul to the devil. You know, we're just hoping that they would come and take his soul, so there wouldn't be no more Chicago in our dances. So, but, you know, church leaders and parents left me alone music-wise. However, a couple of kids had this, and another book called Apples and Onions, I believe, which...
Pop music is the candy-coated onion.
That was the big message. Pop music is the candy-coated onion. And we got a kick out of stuff like out of these books because, you know, we're like 11, 12 years old. We're 11, 12-year-old Mormon kids. We, you know, let's spend the night together was about a sleepover. You know what I mean? That's all it was. It doesn't occur to you, these types of things. And then, yeah, Lex, it's like, you know,
Whippet is about masturbation.
Mm-hmm. You know. And then Minnesota, well, what's that? You know what I mean? We were innocent kids till Lex got a hold of us. You know, introduced us to the drug culture. Oh, son of a gun! Who knew? So, not nearly as insidious as a big steak fireside or anything like that. But I believe I'm as much damaged goods as anyone you will see tonight. So, that's all. Good night.
Hi, I'm John Holman. I live in Seattle, and I work at a nonprofit organization doing computer stuff. Typical Seattle type computer stuff. But the reason I don't know actually how I got on this panel other than I was volunteered. But my story is basically I grew up in a very conservative household. My parents were very conservative politically and musically. And growing up, my brother and I were not allowed to listen to any kind of pop music, period. When I was in elementary school, he was in junior high. Wasn't allowed in the house. We'd play it on the radio when my parents were at work. And as soon as we hear a car drive up, we'd switch the station back and turn off the radio and pretend we were reading. Later, they loosened up a little bit. And in high school, I got into like new wave and punk and. But pretty much kept it away from home until one day my mom was rooting around in my bedroom for some reason and found my Sex Pistols record and confronted me. And it was a very odd scene. It was the first time I heard my father use the F word, and it was just really odd. So I kind of grew up thinking, you know, that music was something to be kept from your parents, or it was somehow not righteous. And then church dances, there was in southern Idaho, you know, every other song that came out on the radio was banned. We couldn't listen to most of Madonna's songs or some of Boy George or Devo, and you know, the list goes on. We have some of it here. And that was pretty much my take on music. Now I'm kind of the anomaly of all of my friends because I like country. So I, out of all of that, I have no idea what happened to me.
More people here than I thought would be here. My name is Matt Coates, and I am an intellectual. That's why I wrote these things down. I'm from Rupert, Idaho, and went to BYU and transferred to U of U. I never wrote or did anything for SR except perform at parties. And I think I live in Seattle now, which explains the glasses connection. So everyone in Seattle wears these. Anyway, I'm going to read this actually. So. I want to fly like an eagle to the scene. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. Growing up in southern Idaho, I always felt a little deprived. There was no culture to speak of. My only real contact with the larger American culture was through music. I listened to the local radio station constantly, a habit I picked up from my older sister, in whose bedroom I slept until I was 5. At night, we would lay in our beds in the dark and sing Knock 3 Times on the Ceiling If You Want Me. And Harper Valley PTA. By the time I was in junior high, music had become a sort of refuge for me. Walkman stereos came out at this time, and I had earphones on whenever possible. It kept me entertained on the hour-long bus ride to and from school each day, and it drowned out the catcalls and taunts I was beginning to experience as a skinny boy with glasses who didn't play sports. My homemade cassettes taped from the radio were filled with all my favorite songs, Skyrockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight. And you take the lime and the coconut, and you mix it all up. In high school, so-called new wave music became popular, and I finally had a musical style to call my own. It was optimistic, daring, and wonderfully removed from anything in southern Idaho. My peers called it fag music and insisted on rock bands or country western music. My own two older brothers listened to Steve Miller, Dire Straits, The Who, Steely Dan, and even Black Oak Arkansas. It all worked the way I suppose it has for generations. Each group redefines what went before and adds its own spin. The older generation hating what was new, the new hating what went before. I believe it was Mick Jagger who said, "The sole purpose of rock music is to drive a wedge between the generations." Imagine my confusion when I attended seminary school class one day and the teacher informed us that for 1 week we would be discussing the dangers of rock music. Lex Azevedo's book would be used as a text. Thank you. I found the whole process extremely interesting. I had never before considered the possibility that music could be dangerous, and I was thrilled by the secret knowledge that was being introduced to us. I had never heard of bisexuality or Satanism, and I never knew that pop music was so complex. Thus starting me on my trail to intellectuality. I was amazed at the intricacy of its double entendres, mixed messages, and cryptic slang. "You dropped a bomb on me, baby. You dropped a bomb on me." It quickly occurred to me that certain songs were never played at church dances, and the DJs always claimed not to have certain records. One year, my sister-in-law was in charge of our state dance festival, and I found her list of possible music lying on our kitchen counter. Certain songs had a line drawn through them and were labeled not appropriate. One song was Wang Chung's Dance Hall Days. I loved this song and was disappointed to see it crossed off the list. I asked my sister-in-law why, and she replied that it contained the offensive line, "We were cool on Christ." "How is that inappropriate?" I asked. She looked at me as if I were from Mars. "It just is, Matt." "Sweet dreams are made of this." Who am I to disagree? I have friends who have returned from their missions and immediately destroyed their record collections. These are fantastic collections, which I would have given anything to own. One collection was destroyed by gunfire. Another was dumped off the Snake River Canyon Bridge. I never understood this. Music has always been my only solace, the only thing that kept me going when all I wanted to do was quit. To this day, I will stop listening to what people are saying if there is music playing in the room. I find Lex's book to be absurd, and rereading it in the current context of this discussion is downright hysterical. I don't blame my seminary teacher, though. I mean, he had to teach 6-hour-long classes 5 days a week. He had to be desperate for material. Anything to fill the demanding attention span of teenagers who would rather be engaging in cow tipping than sitting through another form of Sunday school. Please permit me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and means. The firesides were the truly evil event. Not as tightly regulated as the seminary program or sacrament meeting, guest speakers often showed films, played examples of music, and even explicated worldly perversions in lurid detail. I felt manipulated and terrified, not by the hidden agendas and embedded messages in pop music, but by the hidden agendas and embedded messages in Mormonism. Are we truly free to choose in life, or are we subtly manipulated, sometimes unconsciously, by elements over which we have virtually no control? Fortunately, my studies in literary theory have taught me one simple concept: ambiguity. Break the line, chew the fat, keep moving out into the gap.
Well, we should just go on with the music from there. So let's get started. Now, let me... Yes. Actually, we that's part of the presentation.
We'll be on the overhead.
Yeah, Lex will appear. Actually, let me introduce for a minute the organization, the structure to our presentation. the little that exists. Lex actually wrote this book in the following way. He begins with his reminiscences about his the writing of Saturday's Warrior, and it's 56 pages of of laughter and joy, and it's actually something I wouldn't recommend unless you're suffering from insomnia, because it's really dull. But the good part of the book starts at about page 68, when he begins with what he calls the music of today. He divides it into four sections. There's the drug music, there's sex songs, music for revolution, violence, and anarchy, and finally satanic music. Now, what we've done is followed Lex's four categories and have pulled songs from each category to, well, I guess, to display the immorality and sex that all of these songs contain within them. So we wanted to start by reading the warning that that Lex actually introduces this section with. So if you'd all just make sure you're seated. All right. I don't remember what page that was on. Well, I tell you what we're going to do is... okay. There, yeah. Okay, the warning is as follows. The following chapter is X-rated. And it should be offensive to all Latter-day Saints. I would not dare mention most of what follows, except that many of these records are heard in our own homes and church dances. It is time for us to wake up. We're going to begin with the drug music category, and begin with an old favorite. It's his Jefferson Airplane.
One pill makes you measure, and one pill makes you sore, and the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice when she's 10 feet tall, and if you go chasing rabbits, and you know that all has given you the call for us when she was just small. When men on the chessboard get up and tell you where to go, and you just have some kind of mushroom,
I'd like to introduce the next section by reading a quote from Lex. This is now. Although the Beatles' earliest albums were filled with the bubblegum type of romantic lyrics, their lyrics gradually began to concern themselves less and less with teenage romance and more with something strange and magical. Drugs. The next song is, I think, a favorite of all of ours, but it's repenting.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with a kaleidoscope
laughing. Okay. Well, we're going to follow that up with a another outrageous drug-related song, which is it's actually from a group whose very name is synonymous with, well, evil. Do we have the album? I don't know if any of you know who Steely Dan is. But as we discovered by reading Lex's book, Steely Dan is actually a euphemism for a woman's sexual apparatus. But a Steely Dan. We narrowed it down to an IUD or a birth control pill. Go ahead.
You never knew it was bad, did you?
We've chosen one more of his drug music selections. This is it's actually an old song, and my parents actually bought this for me when I was a child. Thanks, Dad. Okay. Now, this will require a CD player. It should be easier. Okay. Well, let's move on to the section that you all came for. And the section that Lex spends the most time on. So, so we're going to begin with the with the most, I guess, the most infamous of all of the sex songs. And we're also going to begin with a that's okay. Unfortunately, one of our props didn't come through right properly. Let's see. But let's well, why don't we just go right to the song, okay? As you're looking for it, quoting Lex, as a bishop, I was recently involved in a hot debate, over whether or not the song "With It" should be played at a church dance. This debate, which focused on the double meaning of the song's title, became very intense. Some well-meaning young people insisted that there was no harm done as long as they didn't understand the second, quote, immoral meaning. In other words, in quotes, unto the pure, all things are pure. I felt, however, that two other scriptures also applied to this discussion. In Matthew, the Savior told his disciples, "Behold, I send you forth as a sheep in the midst of wolves." Good. "Be therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Now, living among wolves, we must be wise as serpents in seeing things as they really are. Some see evil where no evil is intended, and this is wrong. But others see good where evil clearly is intended, and this is equally wrong. In applying these principles to the debate over "With It" and trying to learn the true intent of the song, we discussed the name of the group that had recorded it. The group is Devo, whose name signifies the de-evolution of mankind. Although the song had the supposed meaning of whipping a problem, as in, quote, "Whip inflation now." It had a double meaning. Whipping it is also, as all of us know, the common locker room expression for masturbation. Let's go to the song.
Whose locker room? I've never been in that one. Excellent.
in the head. Back in the head. It's not too late. To whip it. Whip it good.
Now, Whip It is actually only the introduction to a long chapter. The next song is seemingly innocent, as many of these are, but a favorite of all of ours, I think. Go ahead. Moving on to one of the mainstays at all church dances in the late 1980s, going to move on to Track My Journey. Lex spells that out for you in more detail, but okay, let's go on to now the joy in this next song is that it's probably in every Mormon collection across the globe. So I'm Now, I think that all of us have now learned the technique. So, as we were going through the collection of records that some of us have at home, we discovered that there were other more illicit lurking in our midst. You won't believe what we discovered. Just in case you missed the first track, we're going to move the needle back and start it again. Now, listen closely. Satan will sometimes use our children to teach his message. Now, let's... We're going to move on now to the next section, which are songs about revolution, anarchy, and violence. Now, we're going to begin with the most infamous of them all. We'll read what Lex has to say about it. Okay. Sid Bernstein, who organized three early Beatles concerts, noted, "Only Hitler ever duplicated the power of the Beatles over the crowds." "I am convinced they could sway a presidential election if they wanted to." Okay. Although John Lennon sang at one time that, quote, "You can count me out of a revolution," and that if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow. He later made another version of the same song in which he altered the lyrics to say, "You can count me out in an attempt and in the revolution." In the early 80s, much of his music took on an increasingly anti-religious, pro-Marxist, communist tone. That's all right. As Lex goes on to say, I wonder if any of these earlier singers could have guessed where the revolution would end up today. The revolution of the 60s and 70s was based on a certain youthful idealism. That love soon turned into open sex, fornication, nudity, homosexuality, drugs, and the peace became increasingly violent and anarchic. It was an ugly time in America. And in the world. So, not just in America, we're now going to move to
the British Isles. And I need to introduce it with Lex's words. Perhaps the greatest provoker to violence is John Lydon from the Sex Pistols. He was formerly called Johnny Rotten, and one of his newest albums was acclaimed as the most brutal, frightening music that Lydon has lent his voice to since Anarchy in the UK. His unorthodox music was nothing more than a few splatters of drums with some guitar riffs thrown in. Dark, ominous, abrasive, primitive, and minimal. Nothing more than noise. There's been debate for years over exactly what he spoke in those. Last night we determined we'll play it one more time.
Categorically.
We're going to move on to the next section. That's satanic music. Satanic music, as Lex warns us, is the most insidious of some of the, but also the most easily to spot. And if we're careful and righteous, we'll be able to. You might just spot it if you're careful. But we're not going to play any Iron Maiden today. We're going to start off with someone just as dangerous. Right before that. And
Well, it's a cult. They don't fear the Reaper, and they're sitting in their mansions in L.A. now with a cool couple million they made off the album. One thing we haven't mentioned, and Lex failed to mention, that sometimes artists write music to sell albums and make money. But no. So we're going to go on to something that's less obviously satanic, but as I'd like to read Lex's description of them. It's a band that we all know quite well. Everyone probably has it. Collection. Here we go. The Eagles are a rather mellow, seemingly inoffensive group who constantly refer to demons and witches in their lyrics. So, to make the point.
I'm never going to find it.
Sheer professionalism, that's what we're all about. Another thing we need to talk about when we're discussing satanic music is the fact that a lot of these groups, while having seemingly innocent-sounding names, their names are actually acronyms for something far, far more sinister. I'm sure we all knew, growing up, that the group KISS, their name didn't just mean KISS, it meant Knights in Satan's Service. May have heard that RUSH stands for Rulers Under Satan's Hand. And I was even told in junior high that ACDC stands for Antichrist Devil Children. Yeah. Among other things. But there are some that are not as widely known. For example, Asia stands for All Satanism is Awesome. YES is actually an acronym for Youth Espousing Satanism. And some of them actually hit a little closer to home than that. Aussie, for example, stands for Overdosing Zealously Zion's Youth. And the most shocking one of all, only Satan makes our new daytime talk show successful. It is indeed everywhere. No, I can get it. Now, something that we've all heard about and probably tried many times in our youth is the more sinister aspect of the satanic music, backmasking. I've heard the song Another One Bites the Dust backwards more frequently than I've heard it forwards. Because after I heard in a seminary class that you spin Another One Bites the Dust backwards and it says, it's fun to smoke marijuana. Went home and did it for hours on end and enjoyed every minute of it. No. No.
I'm not even going to answer that one. What's that?
You can edit, man.
So, in case none of you have had the experience of actually hearing this backwards, I mean, never mind that Another One Bites the Dust forward is about gunning down people with machine guns. The backward message is far, far more sinister. Let's, you're going to have to bear with us on all this scratching. I hate vinyl. I'm glad it went away many years ago.
You try playing your CDs backwards. Then come back to us and complain about our records, right?
Before we get to Another One Bites the Dust, though, we've got another one. You may have heard the Beatles' Revolution 9 has a backwards message in it. This song starts out ominously like this. I'll play the forward version for you. That's not it. Let's see. It's the really long track. Okay, that's not it either.
Number nine.
Now, why would they bother to repeat number nine so many times? They must be concealing something, right? Well, it's because backwards it says. Let's find it again.
Number nine.
Okay, now backwards. It's death. It's sex. You may remember that at the end of A Day in the Life, John Lennon says, "I'd love to turn you on." Oh, this is the response. Turn me on, dead man.
No, but the background and stuff, you're going to have to put on a special
machine. You should probably pay close attention to what's fastest on the record player. Because in a couple of years, the only place you're going to be able to see people doing this is like Colonial Williamsburg.
Okay. Now, the I think the most infamous backmasking of all, Led Zeppelin 4, Stairway to Heaven.
You're going to have to be really patient on this one. It's kind of tough to find the spot, all right?
That forest will echo with laughter.
Satan line over and over and over again. I hope you're terrified.
Now, applying the same theory to another album that happened to be in our collection, we have Stairway to Lasting Joy. From Sing With Us, okay? That's the International Children's Choir. Now, that was just for fun, okay? But now we want to get serious again. I'm glad that Lex isn't here, because he'd have to confront something. It's a really ugly detail about his own past. Backwards on Saturday's Warrior.
The song Line Upon Line, right? Curious though, at the end of the song, the end of the album, there's this little spoken message. All right, let's play.
Line Upon Line.
Can we just play it? Okay.
Line upon 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 line
upon line upon line upon line upon line upon line upon line upon line upon line. The first question is, why does she feel so close to Jimmy? The second question is, why did Lex put that on the album at all? Not part of the song. Well, maybe there's something more to it than just feeling close to Jimmy. Let's find out why.
Whoa!
there's more you can actually hear if you continue. The ritual where the goats are slaughtered. You'll hear the goat slaughtered followed by the storms of the apocalypse.